I'm joined in the studio with Murray State University President Dr. Bob Davies. As always, I appreciate you coming up here and taking some time to speak with us about all things Murray State.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you very much for this opportunity. As I think I said last time or in previous times, it's always a good time to reflect on what's happened and happening for Murray State University and some of the things we're working on, going forward on, and some of the great events and activities that have occurred. But first of all, welcome back from spring break. You got to say that... We went from, fall to kind of spring and forgot what winter in between, but things are looking pretty grand for us.
Since the last time we spoke, you had sort of an anniversary. 3 years ago this month, you were asked to serve as Murray State's president. Can you share some thoughts on the past 3 years? Has anything changed or has the role met your expectations?
Oh, I would say that the role, in many ways, has exceeded my expectations. It's been a great 3 years, with 3 years ago, March 12th, is when I received the phone call. We landed in the Denver airport, made the steward upset with me for my phone being on, but nevertheless, we took the phone call, and I was very, very honored to be asked to be the president of Murray State, the 13th president of Murray State. And over the last 3 years, through the interview process and through all of the transition, everything else, I was always impressed by the faculty, their dedication to the students, the dedication to their scholarship is something that's just absolutely amazing, and their commitment to this fine institution. You go to a lot of universities and the faculty have a fondness for the institution, but a commitment to their discipline. Here our faculty have a commitment to the discipline, which is very, very important, but also a commitment to the institution, to the values, the traditions of Murray State. And so over the last 3 years, that continues to astound me in so many ways as I talk to my colleagues at other universities and to hear their stories and the trials and tribulations and everything going on, and then relay them here. We're dealing with many of the same trials and tribulations, but to have the support of the faculty and the staff is so very, very important. Right now, I'm knee-deep in tenure and promotion review documents, and to see those faculty are going up for tenure and or promotion, to see it in paper, to see their progression over the last 6 years for the tenure or in some cases more for the promotions is absolutely just, blows my mind. I, again, just honored to be part of this wonderful university. And the staff, again, a cadre of individuals who will do anything at any time to help a student, to move a university forward, to help the university grow and expand and to meet its expectations, realizing that we are a fine university, but also realizing, too, that if we stay still and if we don't continue to advance and don't continue to move forward, that we will lose that position of being a fine university. And so, again, commitment to our histories and traditions, but also to the new environment. And so, I think that is something that's very, very important. And, over the last 3 years, in every university, specifically public universities, are dealing with challenges. We're dealing with challenges of the explosion and impact of technology on pedagogical skills and pedagogical reach and how that impacts our students, not only from the classroom perspective, but also just the service perspective. And so how we continue to evolve and to develop and to embrace those advancements. Funding. Funding at universities across the nation, again, specifically public, but also the private universities as well, continues to be a strain. Universities have never had enough money to do what they always wanted to do to begin with, but with the reductions that have occurred throughout the state, with the increase of cost, again, we mentioned technology. When technology increases, so does technology cost. And so dealing with, declining or flat the state revenues as well as increased significant cost structures is something that is always upon us. And again, how do we deal with that and move that forward? Having the support of the faculty and the staff in this process in our community is something that's very, very near and dear and very, very helpful. And then also the third lever I put out there is the accountability. Universities, you always have this charge. We got to hold universities accountable. You read that in newspapers so many times. It has increased, but it's also gotten into some very, very interesting dimensions. Accountability for universities has always been part of the structure, part of the effort, and that's why we've had iPads. That's why we have reporting structures. That's why we've have ratios that we always think and talk about. That's why we have various surveys. That's that accountability measure is part of it. But now we're getting into so many different accountability measures that some of them are actually counterintuitive and counterproductive against each other. And so, again, as we evolve as a university, how do we continue to blend the use of technology, use the funding resources that are available to us in the most appropriate and economical way to advance our students, and to always remain accountable to the stakeholders that are so important to us. And the stakeholders are our students, the stakeholders are to the parents, the stakeholders are to our communities, the stakeholders are to the businesses and organizations that hire our students, the stakeholders of the Commonwealth as a whole and economic impact. So again, there's a lot of different moving parts, and it's getting faster and faster, like every organization. So the question becomes is, how do we remain to be nimble? How do we continue to be flexible? How do we continue to be innovative? Over this past year, we've talked about taking a risk and looking at things that we can invest in and say, can we use this as a measure of opportunity to be entrepreneurial, to discover some new thoughts, some new ideas, and put some money behind them and see what we can do? And we've started to do that, and I'm very pleased with that. So far, some of the results have been positive. Some of them have been lukewarm, but that's okay. We learn from those. We are a learning organization. So again, you know, as I reflect on this past 3 years, the community support, the town and gown relationship, working with the faculty, seeing what they're doing in the classrooms. Recently, I just had a chance to walk through geosciences and see all the work that's going on in that particular department. Just by happenstance of doing one of my walk arounds and ran into a professor, that's a new professor, Dr. Vinter, and she was able to take me through her lab and show me how she's using pottery to teach geosciences to students in a very creative manner. She talked about some of the struggles that she has too, and we're working on that. But again, just working together with the faculty, working together with the staff, that to me is what makes Murray State so viable and so important, because of our focus on the students. So meeting expectations, absolutely. Exceeding expectations, absolutely. New challenges on a daily basis. But with each challenge, we're overcoming as best we can, and then also looking for the opportunities within.
Talking about some of the innovations in higher ed and sort of a push towards increasing involvement in STEM education and STEM resources, the Institute of Engineering pilot study was recently concluded here at Murray State. Can you describe what the project is for those who don't know, and what makes it unique, and what the study found?
Well, the Institute of Engineering was a great idea formulated by Steve Cobb and Danny Claiborne and many other faculty and staff, you know, going back 5 or 6 years. It started 3 years ago as kind of a pilot, and so I kind of came in on the tail end of it. And so the kudos really go to the faculty and the staff of the Institute of Engineering and really looking at how do we take our current programs and not treat them as silos, but really treat them as integrated opportunities for students to explore and to go through a program and be able to morph and to be able to change. And also as the students find their own strengths and weaknesses, that they're able to adjust their course of study very effectively and very efficiently. It is also building on the teaching of the faculty in a way across the disciplines within the Institute that is so magical, because again, it goes back to serving the students in a very, very robust way. It also packages the engineering programs, the engineering technology, engineering graphics and design, the physics, telecommunication programs into that single academic unit, so it could really emphasize itself as a spectrum versus a standalone element. And that power of engagement is so very, very important. As the Institute continues to grow forward, I know that they're looking at partnerships with, extending the partnerships with the Arthur Barron Fine College of Business, as well as the Hudson School of Agriculture, and really moving that area, moving in with those areas to do some very, very dynamic things. Outreach to the community has been another very important component and part of this. They have what they call the Test Drive Eraser program, which allows $1.8 million to be used for paid internships, where organizations could use the internship, and if they like it, then they got to come back and hire another one, and they pay for it. But again, having that through a single unit would be very, very difficult. But to have this plethora of opportunities and disciplines that can work together is so very, very important. In my short time in 3 years here, with the pilot being implemented, talking with the firms that hire our graduates and working with our internships, what they're always able to say is that the student will not look at it from a single engineering perspective or a single mechanical perspective. They'll look at the situation, the problem, the opportunity from multiple perspectives within the framework of engineering. And that enables them to be a lot better employers and a lot better workers and more thoughtful in their research and their discussions within the organizations, which is proving to be very, very beneficial for them. This is a first of its kind. It is a home run. It is being heralded by their peers. Having three out of the four ABET accreditations standards commissions give them accreditation, and ABET, as you know, is the highest one. And also the Prominent Engineering Commission is having that gold stamp, having that element, so very, very important. A lot of the universities our size, a lot of our peers do not have the resources that are the ABET accreditations like we do here. I just happened to be on an accreditation visit at another institution, not even close, very similar programs. But they're all separated out, and not able to collectively and put them forward in this manner really shows the power of what they're doing. So hats off and kudos to Dean Cobb and Danny Claiborne and the faculty within the physics department, the telecommunications, and all the engineering areas. They really made this happen for faculty and staff to shed the territorial parameters that sometimes divide us, to say, how do we work together? That's the exciting part. And again, I see this as being a stepping off point, a foundation for other programs to think along the same lines and do very similar activities. The success is there. So again, congratulations to everybody involved.
In terms of sort of outreach activities, there was recently a math day at Murray State involving high school students and teachers from the region coming on with campus competitions and other math-related activities. I take it this math day is part of an effort to embolden STEM resources?
It's a plan to embolden studying math and various other components. I wouldn't say it's necessarily specific related to STEM, but when people think about math, majoring in math, they kind of say, well, what are you going to do with a math degree? You're going to add up things all day long? You're going to go teach? What are you going to do? And you really, when you think about it, the basis of a lot of logic is dealing with mathematical formulations and really thinking about it in that sense of logic and that sense of comparison. And so this was more of a design to broaden the thinking of majoring in math and taking math courses. What does it really mean? What does it really emphasize? And how can a math major go out and expand and be involved in so many different things? And it's really that fundamental core. So to me, it's not just about the math part, the M of the STEM part. It's really about thinking about logic. It's really thinking about research. It's really thinking about how to think about problems in a format that will align with the logic basis in those different types of thoughts. Getting back to the first question that you asked me, it's kind of a reflection on the 3 years here at Murray State University. I think one of the things that it's happened across the Commonwealth, but also across the United States, is what is the value of a university degree? What's it for? And it's a pendulum. Things kind of always go in a pendulum swing, and we're into this pendulum swing right now where it's very technical, job-oriented, manufacturing and science and the technology side and into that area, which is important. I think that it's important that we do have technical aspects of our university degrees, but also at the same time, it is how do we make sure that we are teaching the whole body and the whole soul and the whole mind? How do we make sure that we're imparting not just the technical side, but the logic applications, the critical thought, the ideas of research, the ideas of investigation, the ideas of asking very difficult questions and dealing with those answers in a very profound and logical way, and then being able to communicate them. And yes, this is very much part of the liberal arts program. This is very much thinking of the creative side. And a lot of people, when they think of math, they think of rules and regulations, but math is actually extremely creative. Math is actually, in many sense, obviously a science part, but also a very much of an art part. And so part of the discussion on Math Day was to bring that forward as well, the creative side. And so when we think about Math Day, it's not just numbers and facts and figures. It's how to look at things and develop new paradigms and new perspectives. And that's also when we think about the 3-year and review process that you had me reflect on. It's how do we embolden the entire university? How do we embolden to show that every degree does not just lead to a job? It leads to a career. It leads to a livelihood. It leads to a life being transformed, which will then transform other communities, regardless of what the discipline is, because every discipline is able to create and embolden people, and that's what we need to continue to focus on and be thinking about.
That's a good segue into some legislation that was recently signed into law here in Kentucky. One is performance funding that we've talked about in the past, but there are some measures of change underway for the next academic year at Murray State regarding performance funding. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Performance funding has passed, and it has been signed, so it is now, as they would say, law of the land. And as we talked about frequently across campus for the last 6 months and everything else, there's measures with regards to performance funding with overall graduates, with STEM graduates, with graduates of students from low-income, students from underrepresented populations, progression towards the degree. All of those type of things are quote-unquote under the student success model. Under that model, 35% of the performance funding pool would be parceled out based on our accomplishments relative to the other institutions. This goes back to a very fundamental model. We need to recruit great students who are ready for the rigors at Murray State University, make sure that we work with them to retain them and have them progress towards graduation and then actually graduate and earning their undergraduate degree. There is a segment, if you will, for STEM degrees. We have a very large population already that graduate within the STEM degrees. So we talked about the Engineering Institute of Engineering, our agricultural school, our school of nursing, within our school of business, even within the humanities and fine arts. We have STEM degrees opportunities there, and we will continue to move forward on those. We're not going to come just become a STEM school because of the importance that I just talked about in terms of having the basis of the soul and basis of the understanding, the basis of logic and thought and progression of the body and the soul. So we're not going to lose that because that is part of what makes Murray State special. We will continue to emphasize those things that create the whole body. That is what we will continue to focus in on. We're not going to become a diploma mill. That would ruin our brand reputation. That would ruin what we stand for. I talked about the commitment of our faculty and our staff to Murray State University. That's what it's about. And we will build on that strength and continue to build on that strength by recruiting and retaining high caliber, high quality students who are ready for the rigors of Murray State University. Another part of the performance funding is the number of classes and credits that are earned at Murray State University. Again, that goes back to getting great students in, having great faculty teach them and engage them and enthuse them in the academic world, and having staff that are going to support them throughout their endeavors inside the classroom as well as throughout the university on the co-curricular activities. That's, again, part of our ethics, part of our ethos, part of our culture. We'll continue to expand and grow on that. And then the third part, that's 70% of the student success and the credits, and then the remaining 30%. Is based on what they call open the doors funding. That's how you fund the academic institution, the advising, the scholarship, how the resources are spent for facilities and those type of things. We're very well in shape for this. And so it's another way of looking at funding. It's another way of looking at how funds are distributed out. My concern is to continue to grow that pot for all universities because our share will continue to grow within that. So that's going to be the main subject or the main focus for going forward, because we will compete very well under this model. And so I'm, you know, again, it's a law of the land. It's the rules. We will do everything we can to put Murray State University in the top position for that.
Now, there's a couple other legislation signed into law related to higher ed. One is the Governor Board Bill, as it's been called, which allows the governor the authority to replace a member of a university board or completely overhaul the board if necessary. How would this bill affect operations at Murray State?
Well, right now, I don't think it will really affect us that much. We do have one board slot coming open this year, Regent Sewell's position. Is up for renewal. The board bill also sets very clearly what the dimensions, what the characteristics of the board must be and how it's calculated out. There's been a lot of ambiguity about that, the ratio between Republicans and Democrats, and it does actually also address how, if you have someone who is not a Republican or a Democrat on the board, how that is calculated out, and the various other characteristics of the board, the gender, location, and et cetera. So we know right now we're in full compliance, and so as the board, next Board of Regents comes forward, based on the numbers at hand, it will either be an independent or a Democrat, and most likely a female. And it could be Jenny Sewell. That's the governor's choice and everything else. One of the things that is required is that each Board of Regents has a bylaw that how it would remove a board member and how it would go through the process. We don't have that right now, so we'll have to implement that. But right now, our board is in compliance. They work very well together. They disagree on various issues for various reasons. They voice their opinion, they state their stance, they make their arguments, they apply their logic, just like what we're trying to do with teaching our students in the classroom. And then at the end of that vote, they vote, and it passes or it fails, and they move on to the next one. And you would never know that there was a debate previously, and that professionalism is so very, very important. And at the same time, they hold a very high view of Murray State. They respect what we are able to do. We respect the accomplishments that we've had. They very much respect the trajectory that we are on and continue to look for the escalation of the rigor and the academic standards. They're very committed to, again, having high caliber, high quality students. They want the expectations to continue to increase. And so that's also exciting. They're not looking at just becoming the biggest. They want to continue to be the best university in the Commonwealth. Puts a lot of pressure on me and our administrative team, because we need to continue to reinforce the academic rigor, the academic successes of our students, continue to recruit and retain high caliber faculty and staff members, and to continue to put out amazing opportunities for our students. You know, as budgets come forward and everything else, that becomes a challenge, but that's a good challenge to have. You know, someone mentioned that with performance funding, you just become a diploma mill. That is not our strategy. That's not where we're going to go. We've got too many things at stake to continue to move forward in that progress. You know, I'll point out again, our biggest funding source is tuition, not the state. And so that's how we need to continue to look forward. How do we continue to move forward with those stakeholders? Obviously, we don't want to lose the funding from the state. That's a 25% of our funding source. But our performance is what our students are able to do, how they're able to graduate, and the word of mouth from one student recruiting the next potential student is the most important thing. So, again, focusing in on those areas. The Senate bill regarding boards, you know, it's not going to have a lot of impact on us at this particular time. It's good to have it clarified. A chapter within the Commonwealth is now going to be closed, and we'll move forward on to the next opportunities and challenges.
As we navigate into the next academic year, regarding all the various changes, the CPE Tuition Development Work Group recently met. At the last Board of Regents meeting, there was a preliminary 3% suggested tuition cap increase. Have there been any developments on this front since then?
There actually has been some very interesting developments on this front. The CPE leadership team met with the governor to talk about tuition, to talk about forecasting, and to kind of put things in perspective. And I was very pleased at the outcome of this. I think it's important that you never look at tuition as a one-year decision. Tuition is a multiple-year decision and a very strategic decision. It is financial. It's also obviously financial because of the revenues that are brought in to offset the expenditures that need to occur. But it's also strategic in terms of where do you place yourself within the other institutions in moving forward and the element that tuition that brings to them. And so the first go-around, if you will, was to take a look at the comprehensive universities and to create a mechanism where some of the universities who have much lower tuitions with declining state revenues need to increase the tuition. And just reflecting back a little bit, if you went back 20 years, the comprehensive tuitions were almost all the same. They were within $150, $200 of each other. Some of the universities chose to go very high tuition rates. Other ones, like Murray State, chose to keep the tuition extremely low. When state appropriation was fairly predictable, universities can make those decisions. However, you know, again, that was 20 years ago. Now, looking back 10 years and the significant shifts and changes in state appropriation, those institutions that chose to remain very low are at a significant disadvantage financially than those that chose to go at very high tuition. And so one of the things that the CPE is doing is try to give the flexibility to the institutions, like a Murray State, like a Moorhead, to have a slightly higher increase in tuition than the institutions that have had a higher tuition rate. So they did a differential between them. So that's a part of it. But the second part of it is, too, is not just looking at tuition this year, but what will its impact be on next year, the following year, and on down the line. So the first round was that the 3% cap would be for Murray State. Western Kentucky had a 1% cap, again, to reflect the difference in current tuition levels. But then they had the meeting with the governor, and the governor was very insightful on this one. And when he talked about the challenges that we will have, and this is foreshadowing, the challenges that we will have with pension over the next several years, specifically the next biennium. And they took what the average pension increases have been over the past 10 years and said that, again, we're going to have a pension increase or a state appropriation decline, and we will continue to have fixed cost increases, or all three of those going on at the same time. And so with, instead of having a 3% cap, we have a 5% cap. Understanding that that 2% difference is to be used to offset future cost increases and or declines in state appropriations or pension pressure points. And so you could look at this in a way of creating that savings account, if you will, against future fiscal challenges. And so one of the things that we're looking at is a 3% to cover the increase in our fixed cost of this particular year, and then also then the 2% and how that would impact student enrollment, how that would impact the cost and affordability, but also weighing that, realizing that what they're doing is providing this opportunity this year so that you do not have a very significant increase in the subsequent years. And so we're going through that process right now. We'll be coming forward with a recommendation for the forthcoming year. We will have a student tuition open house. I do believe it's set on either April the 3rd or April the 5th. We'll be meeting with the Student Government Association. We'll be going through all these out, and then we'll be making a recommendation to the CPE. We're also involving the Budget Advisory Committee through this process so that they also fully understand and have input into the discussion about where do we fall within that 5% cap. So again, I really applaud the governor for saying tuition is not a situation where you look at year by year. You really look at the perspective and understanding that the decision that we make this year with regards to tuition not only impacts this upcoming fiscal year, but the fiscal year thereafter and the year after and the year after, because of the way that the increases are put forward and the way the costs and everything else come to go. So it's an interesting time. The last couple of years, we've been between 3% and 5%. We instituted a very robust tuition model this past year that takes into account tuition increases to help mitigate that for our current students. So there's a lot of different moving points in there. But working with the board, working with the students through the open forums, through the dialogue, through the Budget Advisory Committee, and various other aspects, we will be making a recommendation to the Board of Regents on April the 21st, which will be a very busy day. We got a lot of things going on April 21st, but one of those will be the board making the decision and recommendation as it regards to tuition for the next fiscal year.
What else is going on April 21st?
Well, we're having a room dedication within the new Institute of Engineering building, the Engineering and Physics building. We're also calling it now the Institute of Engineering to kind of get back to one of the things that we discussed early on. But we've got two individuals coming that have names named rooms after them, so we're going to be unveiling those, and that's going to be an exciting time, and also kind of doing some tours of the facility and those type of things. At that time, on April the 21st, the building will be nearly complete, if not fully complete. The students and faculty obviously would not, and staff would not have moved into it at that particular time, but the construction's moving on and in good fashion. It should be nearly complete, if not complete. And again, providing some opportunities to recognize some donors and some very strong individuals who have made the Institute of Engineering the program that it is. And then that evening, we have the alumni Distinguished Alumni Dinner. Four recipients this year. One is W. Earl Brown, who is a very dynamic actor and also singer. He's had some very prominent roles. Right now, I'm watching on Prime Amazon Deadwood to get all caught up on that, and his presence on that is pretty profound, and great to see him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him also perform live here in our theater program with Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Tennessee Williams is one of my favorite playwrights, and the Glass Menagerie was performed 2 years ago, and now they're doing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, so I think that's going to be just absolutely dynamic. Dr. Jesse D. Jones, who's received almost every award at Murray State, with the exception of the Distinguished Alumni Award, will be back. And so to honor him for all of his contributions, not only to Murray State, but also to the field of engineering and discovery and all the patents that he has and the companies that he's worked for and everything else, is going to be absolutely outstanding. Then the next one is Dr. Tallwalker, who is a graduate of our Honors College. We're also having a 30th anniversary of Honors College that same weekend. But he is a pediatric surgeon in the Paducah area. And again, an amazing individual, an amazing person who's done a lot of great things for our university and continues to do things for the community. So I'm looking forward to meeting and honoring him. And then also Miss Amy Bryan Watson, a journalism student, a graduate. She is one of the lead anchors in the Nashville area, Channel 5, if I'm not mistaken, and to welcome her back to Murray State is something that, again, that's very exciting to see that happen and that to move forward. So, again, lots of things that are going on. But I also want to point out, too, not only do we have the April 21st event to celebrate achievements, on April 7th, where we also have the Diversity Achievement Awards, which is a very important award ceremony that celebrates the academic accomplishments of the multicultural students here at Murray State University. Honors our students for their academic success, the student organizations who have contributed in making Murray State University a very welcome and inclusive place. And again, something that's very important to me as we move our university forward is to continue to emphasize that diversity is just not a thing that we do. It's not just something that we kind of do on the side. But diversity is and inclusion is a reflection of excellence. At any organization level, we need to be surrounding ourselves with diverse thoughts and ideas. We need to be surrounding ourselves with people with different paradigms and different thoughts. And as we expect our students to compete upon graduation on the global front, we need to make sure that they have that opportunity here, that they're able to meet, to communicate, to collaborate, to be able to reflect. And it's only achieved if we really embrace diversity for what it's meant to be. And that is to make an institution excellent. And if with our goals of being an excellent university and striving for excellence in all that we do, we need to continually mind ourselves how we will be able to do that. And that will only, again, be done if we're able to surround ourselves with individuals who have different thoughts, different ideas, different backgrounds, different traditions, different histories, different ways of looking at things. Any element, any activity that we look at, we always look at it from our own perspective. Once we are able to take ourselves out of that perspective and put ourselves in someone else's, that's when diversity is achieved. And that can only be achieved, again, by making it intentional, by making diversity strategic, by being focused in on how do we increase the number of students from underrepresented groups. And again, not just identify it by affirmative action titles, LGBTQ, political thought, religious, color, creed, abilities and disabilities, everything that you could think about of having the things that quote-unquote make us different. And embracing those, that's where we need to be thinking about, and having those opportunities to embrace those thoughts, to talk about those things. And those aren't comfortable discussions. They need to be difficult. They need to be thoughtful. They need to be out of our comfort zone. That's the only way that we will get to the point where we can truly say that we're in a total inclusive environment. Again, that's something that's very, very important to me, something very, very challenging for all of us, and it should be.
Murray State University President, Dr. Bob Davies, I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. And as always, go Racers.